Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and as a listener of Intelligent Medicine, you can try a bottle of their finest artisanal olive oil, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. I've been enjoying these harvest fresh olive oils for years. They are far and away the brightest, most lively, and flavorful olive oils I've ever tasted. Their antioxidants and polyphenols are off the charts because they're fresh from the harvest. They make store-bought olive oils taste dull and flat by comparison. Taste for yourself. Check out this generous trial offer and get your $39 bottle for a buck with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking today to Dr. Tina Bodwin. She's a naturopathic physician. She has a practice in New Hampshire, Health Strong Integrative Medicine. And in fact, she is currently serving as the president of the New Hampshire Association of Naturopathic Doctors. She also is a frequent lecturer to the public and in corporate settings because her interest is in environmental health. And as a corollary to that, well, she's concerned about our water supply. In part one, we covered quite a lot of water hazards, but we didn't really focus on the subject of lead, mercury, cadmium, arsenic, some of these undesirable contaminants. So tell us about that.
Okay. You should see me at parties. I go over well.
Yeah. Well, please don't drink the water, right?
Exactly. So let's start with one of the biggies, arsenic. Arsenic is number one on the ATSDR, so the Agency for Toxic Substances. It's number one on the hit list as its exposure and damage are at the highest on the list. In water is where you have your highest exposure to arsenic. We've seen it all over the news in the, you know, maybe the last decade. You know, there's chicken contaminated, rice contaminated, grape juice, apple juice, all have elevated levels of arsenic. And even still, your water that you're drinking is the highest level, is the greatest place where you're going to get exposed.
Huh.
And so...
Tina, is this regional? Because, you know, we know, for example, there are places in India where the soil is
contaminated. Oh, just for the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is so it's mm-hmm. not a offshore problem. This is local and well documented. Does it depend on where you live, or is this just a ubiquitous problem?
It does depend on where you live, and I live in New Hampshire, and so we have a lot of granite and bedrock, and so there's a lot of naturally occurring arsenic, and we have some great resources because we have some hotspots in New Hampshire for this reason. In Dartmouth EDU has a great resource on well water and testing in a toolkit for those of you who have well water, and so it is regional, and there's great
university
maps
there, so I guess they're on it.
They are. And so it does matter what parts you live in. And there's an easy resource on EWG.org. You can easily look up arsenic on environmentalworkinggroup.org, and you can see where the hotspots are for arsenic. Mm-hmm. And so the reason why, and actually, so we have some data on it. Public wells, so the limit right now on arsenic in the water is at 10 parts per billion. New Jersey has a lower limit. They're at 5 parts per billion. While the EPA sets the standards, many states can go for primacy, and they get funding, and they're responsible for enforcing within their state the Safe Drinking Water Act. And they can set, as long as they can set the same standards or even more stringent standards than are set by the EPA, and Jersey opted to lower it. So, yay on that one.
Are there some states that are just, forget about it, they don't enforce standards at all.
Well, they rely on the EPA, so they decided not to take the extra funding and responsibility. And so arsenic, and we have, there's a significant portion of the United States that have public wells. So almost a third of Americans, about 100 million people, have public wells as the source of drinking water. And between 1993 and 2007, we found 10% of sampled wells are above those legal limits of the 10 parts per billion, not even
so
the healthier.
So this is a little counterintuitive, because you think, oh my goodness, I don't have that lousy municipal water supply. I have my own pristine private well with artesian water from deep in the aquifer. That could be a problem.
I think you bring up a great, great point. 43 million Americans have private wells. And when they send off their tests, they might be testing for a dozen contaminants. That's by no means enough. Absolutely not. And you also want to make sure you're testing with a laboratory that's not the same one as those that are going to be installing your filtration devices.
Yeah,
you want a
separation. It's sort of a pay-to-play kind of thing where they, in effect, they use the results to market one or another water filters that they propose, usually expensive one.
Yes. Yeah. All right. So what happens when you have too much arsenic in your water, long-term exposure? We know there's bladder, lung, and skin cancer, increased association with liver and prostate cancer, heart and lung disease, diabetes, lowered immune function, poor brain function in children, skin lesions, and endocrine disruption. We see endocrine disruption at 0.7 parts per billion, and the regulation is at 10.
Wow.
So unfortunately, the regulations are based on what's feasible, or, you know, I'm doing quotes around that, and not necessarily on health guidelines.
And you know, one of the points that's made whenever we talk about environmental contaminants is that they've been studied individually, and their thresholds set for levels safety, you know, with an individual constituent like chlorine or fluoride or lead or arsenic, but they have a synergy. They, you know, when one plus one could equal 10 in terms of their synergistic actions if they have an adverse endocrine effect, for example.
You bring up a great point, and we don't know. It's very difficult to study the synergy of these, and especially within the human body and the vast amounts of pathways they can affect. But even looking at these individually, they're quite concerning. In the synergy of them, you're absolutely correct, is compounding the health impact.
So let's move on to another thing in the news, lead. You know, I recall doing an interview with a Dr. Needleman back in the 1980s. And guess where he was from? He was from UMDNJ in Newark, New Jersey. And he was the first to call attention to the adverse neurotoxic effects, the effects on kids' behavior and intelligence of high levels of lead. And this was in the, you know, 1970s, 1980s that he brought this to light. Here we are, fast forward to 2019, and there's still a ton of lead in Newark, where we've known about it for 50 years.
Horrible. And I was, in preparing for this, I looked at what's happening there in their lead levels. And so the lead levels, so the rule on lead is, the numbers here for must be under 15 parts per billion. And so there's also a rule, the lead rule, is that you only have to have water must be under 15 parts per billion in 90% of the samples. So you could have 10% skyrocketing and still meet the lead rule. And we know that there is no safe level of lead in children, clearly. In Newark,
it's absurd to talk, you know, what's the safe level? The safe level is there shouldn't be any.
Yeah, no lead. And it's not a tough contaminant to get out of the water. But the problem is the pipes. And so in Newark, I saw highest level reached of 200, and this is from 2015 data, of 267 parts per billion when the rule is 15.
Whoa.
And so, so, and then we saw in the Newark Water Department serving 273,000, 39 parts per billion, just very high numbers. In Flint, those numbers were up to 700.
Right. That's the where the real disaster occurred.
Yeah.
But hey, you know, 249 That's up there. You know, I wouldn't want my kids to be exposed to more than five.
Exactly. And so the Newark education workers and the NRDC are working together to, well, to at least get, not everybody even there is getting the bottled water, which is not the best solution, but it's better than having your kids drinking contaminated water, especially for the children and the pregnant women who are going to be most affected.
Okay. There's also mercury. There's some cadmium in water supplies at times.
There's mercury, yes. The mercury isn't as big a problem in our tap water. Okay. Where we see it as a big problem, and one of the reasons I brought it up, and it was actually, hopefully it's to motivate some folks, and especially when it comes to power sources, fuel, to know that these things matter and how they're going to impact your health. So the greatest source of mercury in our biosphere, in our communities, is by human origin. And two-thirds of the mercury entering the environment is coming from industrial plants, coal burning, and incinerators. And so we see this in New England. We only have one coal power plant, which we're trying to shut down in New Hampshire. The big reason is more than half the mercury that we're seeing is from coal burning plants. And we see the coal burning plants bring that right up and dump it on New York and New England. And why I'm pointing this out is for all those nature lovers, for everybody out there, we now have mercury contaminates every state in the country, our waterways, our rivers, and now even there's Atlantic and Gulf Coast fish advisories. One out of four streams in the United States has mercury, methylmercury concentrations that are above health, that will cause health hazards. One in four.
This is not about water, but I recently interviewed Dr. Renee Dufault, who wrote a book about the contamination of high fructose corn syrup and other corn-derived sweeteners with mercury because of the chloralkali processing that's necessary for refining these products, and that they're sort of a Trojan horse for mercury as well. Not as much as the coal-fired plants, but people who consume lots of high fructose corn syrup, they're getting a real calorie wallop. They're also getting a substantial amount of mercury.
They are. It's a great point of the high fructose corn syrup. So whether they're eating a fish caught in their local stream or they're drinking their sweetened beverage, they're getting the impacts of long-term or of mercury exposure, headaches, muscle aches, irritability, depression, autoimmunity, which is skyrocketing cardiovascular disease, cognitive defects, memory loss.
And then, you know, childhood behavioral problems and, you know, certainly autism has been linked to mercury exposure. So I think we've gone through quite a list of perils in the water supply. So I want to concentrate for the remaining time on A, how to test, and B, how to economically and practically minimize risk. There's no way to completely mitigate your risk unless you, I don't know, maybe you have, you know, like a, build an entire house, which is like a water detoxification plant next to your house at a cost of, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars. Is there a practical solution for people who are concerned about toxicity? Should they test their water first to determine what the problems are and then key the solutions to what the contaminants are?
Those are great questions. So there's two options. For people who are on public public tap water, go to ewg.org/tap water, and you can type in your zip code and see the main contaminants in your area. Even better, you can ask for, you can Google and look up your consumer confidence report and see your municipal water supply report. Know what's in your drinking water. Know if they're, if the levels are above. And know, again, we're talking just 100, maybe chemicals out of 1,000. So keep that in perspective. So those are good starting points. If you have well water, I would absolutely send it off to a reputable lab for testing. There's two that I use. I use National Testing Laboratories or CAR Labs are the two ones that I recommend. And my patients, I've sent, had them sent off. I had one. I also do the heavy metal testing. I had one patient who came back with elevated uranium. I said, where is that coming from? Whoa. Yes, I hadn't seen that one before. And so that was, we had her water tested and she had elevated levels of uranium. Again, I'm in New England and we have a lot of granite and radon, which becomes uranium. So use one of those two labs to test your water if you have well water.
So it wasn't left over from the Manhattan Project or, you know, some kind of effort to build a bomb. It was, you know, just... It's in there.
Naturally occurring,
Especially in old granite deposits, like radon. Radon also can come out of that. Okay, so that's the testing. You know, so what are the pros and cons of the different types of filters? Because it's really not one size fits all. It kind of depends on what you want to get out of there. And, you know, maybe a combination of filters makes sense.
Nowadays, you do need a combination of filters because think of just some of the, you know, a few of the contaminants we've discussed. There's not going to be one medium that's going to remove all of those contaminants. Mm-hmm. You have radionucleotides, you have volatile organic chemicals, you have fluoride, you have drug residues, the heavy metals. So carbon filters are not going to filter everything. You need different mediums
carbon
to tackle.
Works for chlorine a little bit, though, doesn't it?
Chlorine's actually not the harder one to filter. Chloramine is. So yes. So there are different types of carbon filters. So the big question most folks have is, what I see a lot is people ask about refrigerators. I say refrigerator filters are not a reliable filter. First, you can't clean them. Clean the componentry and mold and other things and bacteria can build up in there. Mm-hmm. And they're going to use the cheapest possible media to filter. And then you have your sink and your pitchers, you know, the little ones you attach onto your faucet.
The Brita filter or, you know.
Right. Yeah. And so those are pretty rudimentary. If you can't afford anything out of your budget besides those, then do that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to talk about some options if you can, if you're able to spend some resources on filtering your water from as many contaminants as possible. And you can have an on-the-counter, under-the-counter point of use. My first recommendation for the budget is get a point of use filter for the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And so you can get one under the sink or over. I got one installed under the sink. I took out the soap dispenser instead of drilling another hole. I have a nice little spout that comes out.
We just replaced we had a hot water dispenser and nobody ever used it. You know, like, okay, if you want hot water, fine, you know, just microwave it or, you know, put it in the kettle. So we just took that out and there was a hole in the sink and there was space under the sink and we put a filtration system under the sink.
Oh, good. It's a great solution.
It's a little better. I think it's a little better than those little nubbers that you put on the faucet because that doesn't allow for a very big or efficient filter.
Oh, no. If you absolutely can't spare any out of the budget, get those as a minimum. But really, they're doing very little to filter your water, so I don't recommend them. Mm-hmm. If you can, you want a multi-stage filter. The big questions I see are beyond, you know, the very basics are reverse osmosis or multiple cartridges. So there's benefits of reverse osmosis. It's not something I recommend because I don't think it's environmentally feasible. So even though it does a good job at filtering many things like arsenic, fluoride, hexavalent chromium, nitrates, it doesn't remove chlorine, chloramine, radioactive gases, trihalomethanes. And so you don't typically see reverse osmosis by itself. You're also going to see it with a carbon filtration system as well. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, it wastes water. For every 1 gallon, you might waste 3 gallons of water. Oh. We can't do that in 2019. That is not feasible.
Okay. I need to know that. That's a revelation to me. Yeah.
Yeah, so it used to be even worse. It used to waste up to 20 gallons, but I think the average now is about 3 gallons. But again, the reverse osmosis, you're still going to need those other filtrations, you know, the activated carbon. Mm-hmm. So there's different types of carbon. My best recommendation, there's coal, wood-based, and coconut. If you can get a filtration option that uses all three, you're going to remove more contaminants. Mm. Coconut shell-based carbon filtration is better for the widest variety, but you still want different size, larger pores, medium pores, and then the micro pores. So carbon filters are important. You don't want a granulated carbon as a filter. You want a carbon block because you don't want contaminants to go around the granules. Mm-hmm. The optimal microns for is 0.5 microns.
That's the particle size.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make sense. I mean, if it's
so, it
it's
can't like go through that.
It's like a sieve, yeah. And if there are big holes in the sieve, then particles get through.
Exactly. And then you always need catalytic carbon. So you need it to be charged to effectively remove chloramine. And it's much more effective at grabbing other contaminants. You want catalytic carbon.
Chloramine is hardest of all to get out of there, I've heard.
Chloramine is, and if you're able to have, and the nice thing is you can have an impact at your local town and state because to create change, if you have contaminants or you have filtration systems that aren't that aren't serving the community as well as they could, you can help create change at that level.
So actually one of the best things to do is to become an activist in your community and demand more stringent controls and testing of the water at its source, because if they have really industrial strength scrubbers that the average homeowner can't afford, and if they, you know, what they put through the pipes comes to you relatively screened, you have less of a responsibility to clean it up yourself.
Exactly. We're paying taxes for clean water.
Oh, and steep water fees in most places.
Yes, and so we're not only paying taxes in general, we're on top of that have our water bills.
Yep.
And so, but also with the rise of chronic disease, and we know there's significant health impacts of these contaminants, you know, it saves the community and the individuals an immense amount of time, resources, and suffering in being proactive and having better water quality.
You know, Tina, one thing we mentioned it in passing, the effect of medications. You know, so many people, you know, flush their birth control pills down the toilet. You know, maybe they decided not to take their Lexapro anymore and they flush that down the toilet. You know, all kinds of things get, you know, thrown down the toilet. Pain medications, you name it. And they reach appreciable levels in the municipal water supplies. For some reason, it seems to be kind of hard to keep those out.
They do. And actually, when I was looking, I wanted to look to see how the New York City water and the New Jersey water were. I saw that there were testosterone in some of your water supplies. So we're seeing antibiotics.
That explains a lot, I think.
Yeah, I know. We're seeing SSRIs, anxiety meds, hormones. We're seeing phthalates, BPAs, artificial sweeteners, definitely seeing Roundup and glyphosates, herbicides, pesticides. So we just, you know, touched on a few biggies, but there's many out there.
Yeah. Well, is one type of filter, do carbon filters help to eliminate some of that?
Carbon do. You want multimedia, and when you're looking at them, a good testing, a good question is you want to see how they remove chloramine, radionucleotides, and fluoride. Those are the most challenging things to filter. So if you're looking to vet your filtration company, you're looking to buy one, you can buy a really good filter mm-hmm. for $500.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Give us a price point. I mean,
yeah.
I want to point out that there's a lot of confusion out there, and I think some of these companies maybe, you know, are they overselling us on water purification systems in some cases? Because, you know, there just was an expose about, you know, people getting more bandwidth. Like, you know, I need more bandwidth, you know, for all my devices in my house. And, and the vast majority of people only use a small fraction of what they pay for. Is there a similar situation when it comes to water filters? Can you overdo it and, you know, get a system like a $5,000 system when, you can get by?
No, well, if you're going with a reputable one, no. But also on some of those, like some on the specialized home water filtration systems, the whole house, you can, you know, drop $10,000 quite easily. But you also want to go with one that could, if they're using reverse osmosis and multiple cartridges of whether it's zeolite, catalytic carbon, and all these other media, they're also likely to have mineralization, because you don't want dead water either. You don't want very acidic water.
Yeah, that's actually another point, is that some people say, well, I use distilled water. That's the best, because there's nothing in it. Is that a misconception?
Well, it's not that there's nothing in it. So if it's distilled, it means there's no bugs in it, but you're still going to have volatile organic compounds. So that it's not taking away everything. So distilled water.
It's taking away the minerals, though, and we actually want minerals in our water.
We do. And so I go with one that actually has a bit of remineralization in the media as well. Mm-hmm. So it has multimedia and also allows for remineralization.
It puts back some essential minerals like mm-hmm. Magnesium especially would be an important one, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, on this one, it's specifically sodium.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, because that's soft water versus hard water. And, you know, if certain parts of the country, the water is too hard. Certain parts of the country, the water is too soft, you know. And so what's the deal on that?
So that's a good question. Again, you're going to want to look at so different filtrations. If you're able to go with this, you know, a very high-end specialty one, they're going to do it based on your specific region and contaminants. If you go for a generalized one, you want to you know, look at your EWG definitely to see the contaminants, because you want to be able to ask, okay, I know radionucleotides, trihalomethanes, and I know in my town they're using chloramines. So I'll know what I have to look for in vetting a filtration company. Mm-hmm. And when you do look and you see their stats, you can call these companies if you want to. You want to know what the levels of the contaminants were before mm-hmm. and after of fluoride and chloramine or any radionucleotides. So those are the three toughest. You want the levels before and after their filter was used. Because they might be very low levels and only one contaminant at a time to test their filter. And again, that's not going to account for synergy.
Mm-hmm. And one final topic is, you know, a lot of people say, well, I'm not drinking that tap water. Yuck. You know, it's got all kinds of chemicals in it. I think that's become a popular notion. So people, you know, will grab a plastic bottle of mineral water, or if they're smart, they'll get a glass bottle. Is there a lot of variability? And do some of those contain fluoride, for example, or due to other contaminants?
They do. There's a good question. I definitely do not recommend bottled water, definitely not plastic bottled water. But we just saw recent reports. I think it was they found Whole Foods had elevated levels of arsenic in their bottled water. Hmm. We're seeing it also in the Keurig Dr. Pepper. Bottled water is no safer than tap water as a whole. There'll be some very high specialty waters, you know, but you're paying, you know, $4 for a premium right. pure water in glass, and that's not sustainable.
Right. I mean, it's bad environmentally. I mean, it's expensive to ship. You know, high carbon footprint and wasteful. And I've heard that some of the spa waters, you know, they just use a municipal water supply and then put some bubbles in it.
They do, and they call it better than tap. No, tap overall, I'd say, is still better than bottled water, 1,000%.
The filter, when it's filtered, and, you know, if the source is the proper source where it's been properly analyzed and vetted. Scary information, but a wealth of information about how to abate the problem. And, you know, I really got to commend you for doing a deep dive on the subject, because, you know, on the one hand, you know, you're working one-on-one with patients to help them with their sometimes challenging health problems. But getting the information out about this can save thousands and millions of people from the ravages of all kinds of mysterious diseases that afflict us these days. So great job in getting the word out. Where can people get more information?
About water.
About water.
About water.
Yeah, do you have a website? Have you put out some of this information?
I will be updating the Health Strong Integrative Medicine site shortly with additional resources on filtration technologies, what to look for, and how to safely filter water in your home. So that's healthstrongim.com.
Okay, and you as a practitioner?
Other resources, the EWG.org is great. Okay. So you can definitely use that, and also your local consumer confidence reports are good places to start.
And NRDC as well, you mentioned earlier.
Wealth of knowledge.
Right. And you are a practitioner, and you know, for a listening audience, you know, people all over the country, all over the world listen to this podcast. Do you accept patients from outside the environs of New Hampshire? Do you work with people long distance sometimes?
I do.
Great. Can you give out the information about that practice?
They can contact at they can contact me at info@healthstrongim.org, or find us on the web at healthstrong, the letter I, the letter M, .com, or call us at 603-260-1545.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Tina, for updating us on this timely subject. And, you know, we wish for a quick resolution of the problems in Newark, but they're only symptomatic of problems across the country and around the world.
Well, it's been a real privilege to be on your show, and thank you for all the work you're doing.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. If you happen to be on a weight loss regimen, studies show that as fat cells shrink, they release stored toxins into the system that can actually poison metabolic pathways and slow your metabolism, causing your weight to plateau even in the face of stringent diet adherence. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Detox Protocol, a collection of carefully curated supplements to mobilize toxin elimination, easing the blahs that sometimes compromise your dietary resolve. The Intelligent Medicine Detox Protocol is an easy way to get the exact combination of the targeted nutrients you need. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for more information and to purchase. Plus, you'll find easy-to-follow links to our heart health and immunity protocols and much more. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.